Welcome to Truth News Australia Radio. It's the 11th of May, 2008. Very exciting show coming up for you today. I'm Joshua Jackson.
And I'm Hereward Fenton. Tonight we've got some stories to cover that embrace issues of discrimination, injustice, and lawlessness within our own country. We also have the 11th of the month action, which took place here in Sydney today. Other actions taking place around the country. So sit back and get ready for a jam-packed show.
So, what exactly is on the show today, Hereward?
Well, today, Josh, we're going to lead with the 11th of the month actions.
And what a great day that was.
Well, I really enjoyed it, I have to say. And I believe that you did too.
Well, it's quite great because you get there and you start handing out leaflets and information and you start to notice the psychology of people in terms of their openness to receive information. I find that the older people are actually a lot more open because they've seen tyranny in the past, whereas the young people who have experienced only mindless ball games and fluff for their whole life.
Of course.
And food on the table every day and not much government tyranny are quite sort of apathetic, and they just walk past and think you're some sort of religious cult.
Yes, and I guess we should elucidate this for our audience who may not be aware of what the 11th of the month is.
Yes.
The 11th of the month celebration or protest is actually relating to the September 11 attacks of 2001. And the worldwide campaign for justice for September 11 was first launched in, I believe, February or March of 2007 from the United States, from a group led by a colleague of ours by the name of Cosmos. And the actions have grown from being something that was done in one or two places to being throughout the United States.
And the actions are basically getting a whole heap of people that are named truthers or 9/11 truth seekers to get out there with copies of DVDs, documentaries, paperwork, anything they can, and distribute it and talk to people on the streets and get it out of the internet and onto the streets, which I think is a fantastic idea.
Indeed. And the movement has grown, and there's a lot of countries now participating. And we, it's a focus, you know, the date becomes a focus. It's often hard for us to get there on the 11th if it's a weekday, but it's good to have.
Well, what I'd really like to do is transition from the 11th of the actual month to the weekend of the 11th of every month, because then you're still incorporating the 11th, but it allows a lot more scope for a lot more people to participate, because I, for one, I'm too busy during the week and I've really missed out. And I'm sitting at work and I'm feeling kind of down because I can't join this amazing bunch of people out on the street. I have to be stuck at work clicking a mouse.
Yes, I can see the point in that. And I think within the next month or two, we'll be seeing some developments along those lines.
But it's really funny seeing the psychology of people when you're giving out something free. They'll almost walk a far distance away from you not to grab anything. And I'll be holding a DVD out saying, come on, free DVD, just check it out, open your eyes. Don't believe the five mainstream corporations that own the mainstream media. And they don't even believe us. Just check out the information for yourself. And some people are very good for it and they'll go, oh, yeah, okay, and they'll take it. But like I said, it's the older generation that mainly do, and they'll be quite interested and they'll walk off. But it's kind of like the psychology of giving something free they're scared of. Whereas I'm sure, I mean, I didn't try, but I'm sure if we asked for $10, they'd be like, "Wow, that's a bargain."
Yeah, sure. I mean, having a monetary exchange forces people to place more value on things. And in the case of trying to reach people through activism, you always have this problem. I mean, I've been doing this for a while now, and I've had a bit of a break from it recently, but I've done it starting from about a year ago. And what I've found is that there is a tendency of people to look at you handing out something as something that they should avoid. And this is really something that's been conditioned into people as a result of, well, so many things being handed out to them that they don't want.
But not only that, it's being, that is the old school way of distributing information through pamphlets and leaflets. But now we have the mainstream media, which constantly feed you through your TV set by getting any sort of other information that it can't be legitimate. You have to be some sort of religious cult standing there or something. You know,
well,
you can't
this is
be
a very good point. I mean, I would say that there is virtually no information being handed out on the street other than marketing scams or religious, fanatical religious pamphlets. Those are the two things you're likely to get handed to you if you walk around our city.
That's right. And so it was great to meet a lot of new people, a lot of mothers out there celebrating Mother's Day. So the streets weren't jam-packed because a lot of people were celebrating Mother's Day, but there was a lot of mothers and stuff there in the city as well we could talk to, and they were quite open to the information. I got the finger a couple of times. Someone called me a terrorist, which I find quite funny because, we're fighting terrorism.
Now, do you think that was said in a sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek manner?
No, well, he called me a terrorist and gave me the finger and walked off really quickly, so I couldn't actually engage in a normal conversation.
Those type of comments are hard to really figure out what's going on, isn't it? Like, well, why would someone say that?
Well, it's a lack of mind and brain capacity, really, to engage in a normal conversation. So they'll just try to abuse you instead. I mean, it could have just been a swear word or anything. It's just that I said that, read the information why terrorism is a joke. And he goes, well, I think you're a joke, mate.
Right.
You bloody terrorist. And then walks off, gives me the finger with his back turned. And I said, hey, come on, let's have a conversation about this. Mm. But they'd rather run and hide. But that's fair enough. Just move on to the next people. Some people are so deeply entrenched in what the mainstream media force feed them while they're eating their Maggi noodles at night. Or their fast food at night, their microwave meals, and they really don't want to know anything else, and it's a very confronting topic anyway.
Well, it is, the experience today was quite satisfying, and I really did enjoy it, I have to say, and I think that we were quite successful in terms of what we did.
Well, absolutely, we gave out hundreds of DVDs.
Yeah.
We gave out DVDs of a compilation DVD of 911 Mysteries and Terror Storm, and we also gave out singular DVDs of Final Cut, Loose Change. And
now, for anyone listening to this who still doesn't know what the hell we're talking about, I'd just like to point out a couple of things. We don't accept that 9/11 was an event carried out by 19 fanatic Islamic hijackers working from the direction of a fanatic in a cave, working solely independently to bring down the world's most powerful military that ever existed. We don't accept that.
Well, neither did Osama bin Laden. He stated in a CNN interview, that got syndicated by CNN. It was actually an interview on Al Jazeera, stating that this wasn't me. And he said this on September the 12th. 2001, said, this wasn't me, this was done by someone else for personal reasons, quote.
He issued a denial immediately.
Yeah, no terrorism group denies something that they've done. In fact, you get hundreds of groups jumping up saying that they did it. But he said no.
But Josh, 2 months later, the famous bin Laden confession tapes were recovered from an apartment in Islamabad.
Oh, yeah. And the guy doesn't even look like him. But to the untrained Western eye,
he put on some weight.
He put on a lot of weight, and he was wearing a ring on the other finger. He was eating with his other hand, even though he's right-handed or something like that. He was eating with his left hand or vice versa.
This is known colloquially as the chubby bin Laden.
Yeah.
If you Google this, Google chubby bin Laden or fatty bin Laden, you'll come across a lot of articles discussing this strange video.
Look, and we ask all our listeners to not believe us ever, but to believe yourself. Go and do your own research. We just deliver the news. We ask you to go and look into it because we don't want you to be propagandized by the mainstream media or the alternative media. So go do the research yourself. There's some great documentaries online, Google Video. Go to video.google.com and type in 9/11 mysteries. So that's 9/11 mysteries.
That'll get you somewhere.
Yep. Another documentary is Terror Storm. That's Terror Storm. Another documentary would be Loose Change, Final Cut.
Definitely get the final cut.
Yep. Because Loose Change started off with one documentary that two young filmmakers made.
An interesting point to make, Josh, is that of all the documentaries that have been given attention by the mainstream media, Loose Change has got the most attention. But it has been the earlier versions of Loose Change that have got the attention. The new version of Loose Change that came out just a few months ago has not got any attention whatsoever. It's been completely ignored.
Well, that's because it's watertight.
That's because it's much more mature. It's well made, and it doesn't have any kind of speculative material in it.
No. The initial guy, what was his name?
Dylan Avery. Was the original maker.
He sat and thought, oh, a great film would be, what if September 11th was a self-inflicted wound, just as a film concept. As he started researching, getting more into it, he sort of realized, wow, this is really full on. It is an inside job. And he kept on going and going. And he released the first film just out of his bedroom from footage he'd cut and little bits and bobs. Then the second...
It had some mistakes in it. It had some ill-considered things in it.
I mean, but this is made by a 19-year-old couple of kids in
their
bedroom.
What did you do when you were 19? I never did anything.
No.
I mean, I didn't do anything groundbreaking or come up with any original thought at all.
No.
I mean, this kid did something original.
That was amazing. And then they went off and revamped it and realized that some things were not quite right, so they made the second edition.
They took out the pod stuff and they took out the, you know, there was stuff in there in the beginning that was like a little bit fanciful, you know. So
and that's
that
fine.
Out.
Look, and everything should be looked into, but they've realized that that's no good. So they've revamped it, second edition. Now they've come up with a final cut with a little bit more of a budget and a distribution network. Bless them, they've done really well for themselves. So I'd beg you to check out 9/11, Loose Change, Final Cut.
Let's break for some headlines.
Tasers, 50,000 volt electric shock can cause fatal heart rhythm. The Toronto Star medical experts say it only takes about 100 milliamps to cause the heart to go into a fatal rhythm. And medical studies say that low voltage electrocutions can happen without any visible evidence of injury.
Record number of flu vaccinations to be manufactured, Associated Press. Even though flu vaccinations are ineffective and many contain thimerosal, the industry plans to manufacture 140 million doses.
Tommy Chong doubts official 9/11 story. Cheech and Chong star speaks out as FBI confiscates 10,000 copies of the actor's political DVDs.
Welfare card plan deeply flawed. A former human rights lawyer is accusing the federal government of breaching the Racial Discrimination Act with its planned electronic debit card for welfare recipients.
Now, there's just some headlines for this week, and we're going to get a little bit better at doing those in the next four coming weeks.
We're just working out the routine here.
Routines. But now let's talk about this story of the welfare card.
Sure.
Now, this is a system that's come into place in the Northern Territory. This is all under the guise, as it always is, to stop child rape in Aboriginal communities.
Well, that was
that's where it came from originally.
Yeah, the intervention, as it was called, was set up to prevent paedophilia.
And who's going to say no to that?
No one could ever argue with that, otherwise you'd probably be accused of being one of those.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what has happened here is that they've said it's all come out that, well, far too much money goes on grog of the welfare money. So what they have set up some system now where you will get a debit card and you can spend that your welfare fund only on certain things like food and necessities. So you can't go and buy alcohol.
Indeed. And, well, basically, the plan here is for the government to sequester some of your welfare money each week and then dole it back out to you through your debit card, but only on things that are good for you, Josh.
Now, see, this is a real... This makes me so angry because this is where it starts. What happens next is that the government all of a sudden has an interest in databasing what you purchase and where you purchase it from. So all of a sudden, the government's got control of what you buy, and if you buy the wrong thing, they take it away. I mean, this is what happens. When the government gives you something, they actually control you because they can take it away from you, and you become needy and you can't survive without it. So where I can see this going is controlling what you buy. But then what happens is a big corporation says, well, you can only shop at my corporation. You can only they'll do a deal with the government saying you can only shop your debit card at Coles.
Well, let's just read here from some of the news headlines that we've got on the topic. Jenny Macklin, government MP, I'm not quite sure what her portfolio is. Minister, has said the following. The debit card is designed to make it easier for people who are having their welfare payments income managed.
I think the issue here is they've already stated that, you know, it's only the Aboriginals, only Aboriginals to start with. And now they're openly saying this is for everyone nationwide that is on the welfare system to have your welfare controlled by the government, that you can only spend it on certain things.
But Josh, according to the government, this is all in your best interests because they are going to make sure that the money you receive from your benefit is spent in the interests of children and not being spent on alcohol, tobacco or pornography.
No, of course. And, you know, all that will happen is there will be a black market for these stupid debit cards. And how are they going to infrastructure some sort of debit card? What's going to obviously happen is that a bank will get the contract. So all of a sudden you'll get an ANZ bank card, which is a debit card which you can only use at a certain corporations.
How are they going to, for example, police the pornography aspect? I mean, let's say you go to the newsagent with your debit card and you buy the Sydney Morning Herald and a copy of Playboy. Are they going to say, over the counter as you go to pay, excuse me, you can have this one, but you can't have this one because your debit card says Playboy is not on your list?
Well, I doubt they would, because that means the policing is down to the people. What they will do, though, is that they'll use the guise of fear that they're building up a system, and this is where it gets dangerous, folks.
Is Playboy pornography, by the way?
Well, I think it would be if it's got above an R rating. But this is where the danger lies. They will start databasing everything that you purchase, kind of like flybys, or those sort of schemes where you swipe your card to get points. But what it actually does is database exactly what you buy and build up a profile of you. Now they can keep you in fear of, ooh, I bought that porno. Or bought the tobacco. I bought some tobacco or a bottle of booze, and in 3 months' time, I'm going to have to pay that money back because it's not the type of money I've got. Then who suffers? The children, because all of a sudden you're poorer again, because they fined you for buying a bottle of beer.
Well, there's two possibilities in terms of the way it could be policed. I'm not quite sure which way they're planning to go, and probably need to investigate this to find out. But two possibilities are they could intercept your purchases over the counter, which is difficult, clumsy, or they could basically log everything you buy and then with the potential to basically use that against you. And I think the latter option is probably more bureaucratically convenient for them, but in which case it's going to be practically useless, because how are they ever going to enforce it if it's...
Well, it's more of a data mining procedure.
Right.
That right. It's automated, that when a product goes through, a Google-style spider will crawl all these databases saying...
Oh, it's absurd, isn't it?
You know, that's a tobacco product. Flag this fellow or this woman and fine her at a later date. And what happens, though, this builds the small infrastructure... but they would have spent millions and millions on it, and they'll then roll that out onto everyone on the welfare system, not just the Aboriginals in the community, which is quite racist, but to everyone that is on welfare. Then it's not too far of a stretch of the imagination to draw that out to everyone that's not even on welfare, to everyone and what you spend. That everything you spend then goes into databases and mined by the government to maybe stop you having too many trans fats, or have you having too much sugar, because that's child abuse if you buy too much sugar. Or, you know, you might laugh at that, folks, but that is the truth. As the government starts controlling every part of your life, instead of educating you and giving you the choice in a free and democratically elected society to have too much sugar, they'll start policing that.
Also, it does look to me as if this is potentially a national ID card in disguise.
Oh, it absolutely is. That's right. And it's not only a national ID card. You're then databasing every consumable products. You are a consumer. You're not a human being anymore. You're a consumer. And that consumer then is databased and watched upon what you consume, and then profiled and basically controlled.
And ultimately, of course, this card could be converted to an RFID chip, because there's no fundamental need for it to be a card.
And look,
as we've seen plans, warned of in the past, this could become the very thing that we've been most concerned about, the ultimate tracking device that would be possibly implanted in you. And if you were to if you were to be a recipient of welfare benefits, they may in fact make it a trade off for you. Well, you can receive the welfare benefits. However, in order for you to be able to do that, you'll have to take the chip. Now, this is a soft way. This is an easy way in for them to get the chips into use, because they're already using them for prisoners on day release in the UK. The conditions for release for prisoners on day release are they have to be chipped. So this is a way in which government can begin to introduce something that we all find utterly abhorrent, the idea of being tracked like animals.
Absolutely. And if you're a Christian, you'd see that as the mark of the beast as well. You know, there's all sorts of things that society should find absolutely repugnant, whatever religion or whatever walk of life you are, that you should be tracked or marked as a certain style of person. Now, we are digressing a little bit.
But an interesting point to make here is that one of the advocates against this whole procedure now is actually Tony Abbott, who is from the previous government, is now in the opposition. And we're in a position now of looking to the Liberal Party to be the champion of our civil rights. I mean, it's
a joke.
It's mind blowing, isn't it? I mean, I'll just read to you from Tony Abbott's recent comment on the AM program on the ABC. Tony Abbott: "It's going to create two classes of welfare recipients if it ever does become operational. Good recipients, in inverted commas, who aren't quarantined, and not so good recipients who are quarantined. And this distinction between the deserving and the undeserving, while fine for individuals to make, is not a judgment that I think governments and officials are going to find easy to make."
Now
sorry, you go first.
I love the fact that if he was actually in power,
yes,
he wouldn't be saying anything of the sort. He'd be pushing as hard as he possibly could to get this through.
Yeah.
But as we have an opposition, we have to see it. So what you're seeing here, folks, is that you don't really have a choice. the party line gets pulled, whoever you vote in, and the opposition just does what the opposition should, and that's kind of half oppose it.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a circus sideshow, what we have here. The media coverage of the phony opposition questioning a policy that they themselves would have brought in if they were in power.
That's right.
Supposedly standing on our side, but knowing that they have no power, so they won't be able to have any effect with it. While the government, which was supposedly the government to bring in social justice, is bringing in the laws that are oppressing us.
Folks, we need to understand, you've got a choice here. It's not the choice of Democrat versus Republican or Liberal versus Labor or anything like that. That's not your choice. The choice is people and government. Now, that is the true choice. Tyranny versus freedom. They're the choices. Now, every law that gets passed, every law which gives government more power, especially upon your consuming habits, is another law putting you into bondage.
Totally agree. I think it's time for our musical interview.
There we have it. Bob Marley and the Wailers. Get up, stand up.
The one and the only.
Absolutely. What a man.
Couldn't write a bad song, that man.
Yeah, he found it pretty hard. Died of toe cancer.
Yeah. You got to watch out for those footballs.
Yeah.
Some people question that.
Another thing we wanted to talk about today is just quickly cover that a whole heap of us 9/11 truth seekers went down and canvassed the annual Greens policy meeting.
Yeah, we certainly arrived in force, and I think we kind of outnumbered the people who were already there when we arrived.
Oh yeah, by far. Mm. We very successfully pushed 9/11 as what we wanted as policy was a new investigation into 9/11. Why 10, you know, Australians being murdered during 9/11 when those buildings collapsed? Why that hasn't been reason enough to have a proper investigation.
Yeah. And this event was managed by John Bursell, who's leader of truthaction.org.au, and he's actually a member of the Greens. And John encouraged us all to come down there and join in the discussion.
Yeah, and he really did a fantastic job. So
good on you, John.
Good on you, John. So that's great news.
So, Josh, I'd just like to get your feedback on the afternoon that we spent at the Greens. It was my first experience going to actually a political party of any kind, and I take it the same for you.
Yes.
And how did you find the experience?
Well, it was quite organised. They had a list of speakers and what they're going to talk about, what they're going to canvass, and then they had some lunch, and then they asked for general discussion from the audience or participants in the meeting. I really think that a lot of them have a great heart and want to have good social change. And I mean, I generally agree with 90 or 85% of Green's policy. I mean, I don't consider myself a lefty or a righty. I actually consider myself a libertarian, and I deeply love green issues. I mean, I think I've been a greenie from way back. You know, I'm a big fan of looking after the earth and the environment. Absolutely.
But you know, the experience I found was that sitting there during the various speeches that were given, I felt a little bit bored, to be honest with you. And I felt...
Well, it is politics.
Well, it's politics. But you see, the mandate and the purpose of what the Greens is all about, according to their own statements, is about engaging you and me. But to sit through discussions of their procedure and
history,
and the way they manage themselves and all these things, for those things to take front seat, when I feel that there are burning issues, it seems to mask. It seems to create a situation where maybe it is they don't even acknowledge the way I see the world, because the way I see the world is that we don't really have the luxury of sitting back and doing everything right from a bureaucratic paperwork point of view.
But you've got to remember, this is an organisation. And an organisation is exactly that. It's organised. And they've got to cover everything in a systematic point so that everyone knows where they're up to. And I agree with where you're coming from here. But political parties are boring at the best of times, I think. And
do you think, though, in
they
in
could
the light
make a bit more show and dance of it, I guess.
Well, in the light of what you say, I mean, do you think there is much chance of this issue that we've brought to the meeting,
the 9/11 truth issue,
which is an issue of passion,
absolutely,
and pure idealism on one level, because the people who are concerned about this are concerned about the truth. They're concerned about not having lies promulgated.
Well, you could tell that the people there were really, this was you know, and the Greens are some of the most passionate people. I mean, I don't agree with man-made global warming at all. I think it's a big farce. But they do, and they are quite passionate about that subject, and they're quite passionate about other things. But to see the passion that the 9/11 truth superbly superseded their passion, I mean, it was extraordinary. She was bowled over by the amount of information bombarding her.
Yes, I think there was evidence of commitment. Evidence of like a lot of education,
yeah,
awareness, ability to talk on many different subjects.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, I think very good point.
Yeah, and for me, it was a good experience. I really enjoyed it, and it gave me hope for the political process to have a little, you know, to hopefully get this out, as the Japanese Foreign Defense Minister stated when he was in Australia. What was his name?
You've caught me off guard there. I don't want to say it because I'll probably say it wrong.
Fujitsu something or other. Yuki Fujitsu.
Yes.
He stated this has got to come out of the internet world.
Fujita,
that's the one. It's got to come out of the internet world. 9/11 truth has got to come out of the internet world and into the political spectrum. Because without that, we won't go anywhere. We'll just be telling each other back and forth. So I think us doing this is a great first step. And it could have been Democrats or Liberal or Labor. It could have been anyone. But because John Bursell and myself are members of the Greens.
But when John launched into his introduction to the topic after the preliminary period, when we have the question time, the initial response that John received was, just if I can paraphrase, something like, well, you know, that's all very interesting, but it's a bit of a distraction.
That's what one member said, yes.
And this is a common response. This response has been echoed by people like Noam Chomsky, people who have a lot of credibility as like left-wing intellectuals. And a lot of, often these people in our movement are referred to as left gatekeepers. And they tend to say, it may be true, but even if it is, let's not talk about it. And how do you,
because
how do you think
we need
that?
To talk about the issues.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think as activists?
Well,
that,
I'm totally repulsed because the point is that he said we've got to not deal upon 9/11, but deal on issues of civil liberties being taken away. But the fact of the matter is, every time they pass another anti-terror law, the big phrase comes out of their mouth, which is, after the world hasn't been the same since 9/11.
Yeah.
And to say that we shouldn't focus on 9/11 is like saying, well, they shouldn't focus on 9/11, but they do. So we need to come up and confront, because all they will do is that have another false flag terror attack to get us into Iran or any other war that they want. Because then once you catalyze and fear monger the civilization, you can get them to say yes to anything. And that's why it's important for 9/11 truth to come out and be a proper investigation in a court of law and through the political spectrum.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? It's like, you know, it's Christmas time and we're saying, well, Santa doesn't exist. And they're saying, well, look, we know that, but don't mention it because it's good for Christmas. And it's like a situation where there's this little lie that is allowed through because for some reason they think it's helpful to have the lie. And, I mean, I don't think it's helpful, but the government apparatus thinks it's helpful because it allows them to push laws through Parliament, and it allows people to feel safe against the threat of terror.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, the analogy with Christmas is not a healthy analogy. I'm saying it's an analogy in the sense that there's a little fib being told, and everyone's keeping hush hush about it.
Just a little one.
Yeah, just a little one. And but the consequences are not presents for the kiddies. The consequence is quite the reverse.
So,
but it's patronizing all the same.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone that looks into 9/11, for anyone. Apart from 1% or something like that, it is absolutely obvious once watching just a couple of movies and doing a little bit of research that 9/11 was an inside job.
Inside job. And look, not only that, there is a great difficulty getting any debate going on this topic for the simple reason that it's very hard to find anyone on the other side.
It's very hard to debate.
Who will debate it? Because they won't debate it.
The 9/11 truth is basically, it's hard to fight truth because it's hard to debate the evidence, the mountains and mountains of evidence. And now the ex-Italian prime minister has come out and said, oh, it's common knowledge in the intelligence agencies around the world that 9/11 was an inside job.
Indeed. However, that person in particular, I have my, I guess, reservations about as a good advertisement for 9/11 truth, because he himself was involved in criminal activities. And yeah. This was the Operation Gladio, which involved false flag terror committed in Europe. And I'm sure what he's saying is true. However, his implication.
Well, a chef knows his own sauce, right?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, it's just quite often some of the people who speak out on these matters have backgrounds that make it difficult for us to. This whole area is full of many people who speak out, and some of them can be relied upon. Some of them possibly have other reasons why they're speaking out. But the question is, we don't necessarily have to care about the person. And I think this is something really important we need to move towards, is to stop worrying about the person and concentrate on the fact.
Well, look, the facts are just endless. So go and research it, listeners, please. And if you haven't, do so. And if you have, tell your friends, tell your family, and get it out there, because this is extremely important. Okay, well, what's up next on this show, Herald?
Well, believe it or not, Josh, we've got some more tales to tell of social injustice.
As always.
It's going to be a theme of this show, and we don't apologize for it.
What, exposing social injustices?
Yeah, I mean, it exists.
This is what is ridiculous about modern mainstream media. That is basically the memorandum of the media, is to expose social injustice constantly. But instead, all we do is show Paris Hilton and what her hairdo is today, and how much weight this person's gained, and what the better brand of milk is.
Yeah, and then we only have room for just, you know, one or two little, you know, sympathy pieces.
Maybe, oh yeah, after the sport and the crap that really doesn't matter.
Maybe we can worry about Delta Goodrum, you know.
Whether, oh yeah,
whether she got out of hospital or had her chemotherapy or whatever.
That's right.
You know, okay, well.
Anyway, I digress, sorry.
Yeah, I think I digress there too. Now, I'd just like to cover a story which is quite relevant to Sydneysiders. And I'll just get it up here on the screen. The story is in relation to a shopping mall in the western suburbs, but it could potentially relate to any shopping mall, and it could potentially relate to anywhere in the country.
Well, what it basically is that a certain shopping mall has banned school kids during certain hours, namely 9:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m., from using the shopping mall. Now, what this equates to me is just another form of control within the control grid of pseudo-police.
These are corporate thugs, essentially.
Corporate thugs, basically, who are saying, you know, security guards going up to and harassing kids, holding kids.
Yeah.
Which is sketchy in my heart. I mean, they're just security guards. How dare they hold my children?
Well, exactly. I'll just read the headline here. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald last week. School uniforms banned in shops. This was on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald, by the way. Children have been prevented from boarding their school buses by a new policy that aims to ban truants from a West Sydney shopping centre. West Point in Blacktown has become the first shopping centre in Sydney to forbid children in school uniforms entering between 9:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. Now, as a true blue sort of suburbanite, you might say, well, what's the deal? What's the big deal? They should be in school between 9:30 and 2:30, and it is a nuisance, them hanging around the shopping centres. They cause trouble. What are you complaining about?
Young punks!
Yeah, they just cause trouble. Stop complaining. Stop being one of these bleeding hearts. You know, why should we let them run around? They're meant to be in school. And I assure you, there have been shock jocks this week on the radio saying just that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Yeah. These young punks should be in school. Yeah. Well, that's not where it stops,
But let's take a different scenario. Let's accept that maybe there are these nasty drug-taking social misfits. But let's say that there's a young 16-year-old girl who has to go to the doctor.
Oh, hold her. Get a security guard to grab her and hold her till the police come.
What if...
Because she's wearing a school uniform.
What if a year 11 student leaves school at 12:30 p.m. because they don't do sport right? And then they have to catch a bus. And the only way they can catch the bus is to walk through the shopping centre. And they get stopped by a security guard.
Look, the fact of the matter is all these issues, it's not really about that. It's about training our kids to live under tyranny, to live under security guards and menial pseudo cops controlling every part of your life and whether you constantly have to think, am I allowed here? Am I allowed there? What time is it? Can I actually pass through this section of the city? This is all control, mind control, to manipulate you into thinking that the state has power of where you move. We live in a free society where we should be able to be where we want, when we want, apart from on private, in private houses and private property, going through someone's private property.
You know, the absolutely incredible thing to me when I read this story was that this is not just some extreme event that hopefully will be dealt with. This event has been applauded by the Premier of New South Wales. He's aware of it. And he says, quote, "It is a sign of community spirit when people feel a responsibility to encourage young people to be in school. Our levels of truancy are low, but we take it seriously because losing engagement in school is one of the early signs of problems for young people." Now, I just want to suggest to you that this man who is the Premier of this state is acting illegally, is acting completely outside of law. In what can only be described as a gangster like manner that is so extreme that to me we I am also considering recent events such as the banning of laser pointers for which he is personally involved, that we have a premier of this state who is an out of control fascist-style thug.
Harold, we see other forms of control coming into play all under the guise of truancy, all under the guise of bludging school. And this other form was a high school in the northern suburbs was recently exposed for starting to thumbprint students for roll call. Mm. No, it's not good enough asking if Billy's present. No. You have to actually go and scan your thumbprint. This is, again, another way of psychologically getting the kids used to a state control of biometrics and all sorts of stuff. And look, they always say it's for truancy because the road to tyranny is paved with good intention and always has been, always will be. People want laws to stop this, to stop that. But every law is another brick in your wall of freedom.
Now, folks, you need to confirm these stories for yourself. You need to Google these stories. Google school uniforms banned in shops. Google it and find the story. Google a story about thumbprints
for students.
Thumbprints for students on the North Shore. Google.
Oh yeah, do you know? And I rang the principal for the school and gave her a great big lecture on tyranny.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, thumbprinting all these schools, these kids is absolutely ridiculous. And she said, you know what she said? She said, "We're not thumbprinting them, we're thumb scanning them."
Ah, well, it's okay.
Totally different. Oh, why didn't you say so? I mean,
there's no ink involved.
This is the sort of Orwellian style language manipulation.
You see, it's harmless. This is similar to the electromagnetic full body scanner. That basically lets you see someone in the nude, but because you don't touch them, it's fine.
Oh, it's okay for some fat security guard to sit there perving on everyone that walks through.
It's totally fine. It's non-invasive.
No, that's not tyranny. Look, let me tell you, tyranny is when they control your food, when they control everything about where you move, when they control your personality and ask you to log in and scan and control every part of you. This is what tyranny is. And folks, we're heading slowly towards it if we don't, as the people of this country, state that we don't want to be tracked and traced.
We have to fight back. And this is where I say when I go to a meeting when I go to a political meeting and I see everyone sitting around acting like, you know, there's no big deal. And to me, there's a big deal going on. And I'm wondering who's going to stand up, who's going to be the person who stands up and actually becomes a revolutionary in this society.
Well, look, the fact of the matter is, Harold, our national anthem says, Australia, let us all rejoice, for we are young and free. It does not state, Australians, let us all rejoice, for we are young and tracked and traced.
Indeed.
Does it?
Indeed. Well,
and that's because our founding fathers and members of Australia knew that freedom is extremely important. And so I would urge every one of our listeners to have some political action and get mad, get angry, because you are part of the society and you have to get mad about some of these things that are happening, some of these control grids that are popping up. When you see a story in the newspaper that is aggravating you, ring up, like I did, ring up the school that started thumbprinting everyone. Ring up the local MPs. Ring up the newspapers and complain. Really start getting amongst it.
Indeed. And Josh, there's just one more disturbing story I want to cover tonight, which is a story that has some personal connections for me. But I know it's one that's very relevant to probably hundreds of thousands of supporting parents in this country. And this is a system that was brought in by our previous government. And it's a system whereby the recipients of supporting parent payments are required to actually put in a minimum of 15 hours of work each week in order to qualify for the payment. And it's a rather bizarre system, because the supporting parent payment has been for decades there as a safety net for people who have the custody of a child who don't have an additional income. And the government has provided them this non-means-tested support. Now, the Howard government changed all that, and those changes have gone through without a squeak from the Labor Party in the new government.
Right.
And they are the most outrageous, and unfair system, because what it does is it places an onus on the recipient of one of these benefits to find this minimum amount of work. And for some people that's okay. Some people can do it, some people can't. It sort of depends on what type of skills you have. Like if you do waitressing, you might be able to find a waitressing job in the middle of the day when your kid isn't at school, right? But a lot of people would find that hard. And if you don't happen to do waitressing, you're going to find it hard to get that kind of work. And waitressing pays really low, by the way, you know. But I mean, you know, so I mean, this is not in any way.
So anyone that isn't a career person, or maybe they are, if they're a career person and they have to take time to look after their child, to get this payment, you're saying they have to do 15 hours of work a week.
But who can do 15 payment? Hours a week? You see, this is the problem. I mean, if you have any kind of professional work, you can't just work 15 hours a week. I mean, you work in your profession. Would you be able to work 15 hours a week?
No, absolutely not.
You've got to be there full-time or not at all. Those are the two choices you have. When you do professional work.
Well, it's bad for the employer. The employer doesn't want 15 hours work. Yeah. They want the work done by you or full-time by someone else.
The only kind of work that you can do like that is relatively low-paid work.
Well, you know what this looks like to me? This is absolutely an abolishment. They're just trying to abolish it. Instead of saying, we're going to get rid of it, which would cause an uproar, they just make it so bloody hard to get it.
They do. Well, they make it hard unless you – if you do your 15 hours a week, what happens is you simply phone in and you get your payment regularly. But they take money off the top because you've supposedly earned this money, so they pay you less, right? But if you don't phone in with your, you know, average earning of 15 hours a week, they force you to come into the office and they force you to fill out a form to explain why you were not able – to do your 15 hours of work a week. And I have a close friend who was put in that situation, who has been doing this for years. And she normally always works, but one week she was sick. She called in to say she didn't have her 15 hours a week, and she was treated quite in quite a threatening way over the phone. And they said, well, you'll have to come in and fill out some forms and we'll decide whether you should be paid.
And because she said, you're scum.
And she said, what about my record? I've been doing this for so long. Doesn't that count? And he said, no. It only counts for the last 2 weeks. That's as far back as we look.
Well, so, that's right. But this, Harold,
makes no difference what your character is, what your background is. Everything's forgotten. And there's just this anonymous, impersonal bureaucracy that you constantly have to engage with.
Well, look, this is, again, what I said before, is that when you get given something by someone, you are then owned by them because they can take it away from you. Or they can ask for something back from you. When you get given something, it's never for free. Even though we've built up these social structures around our society to help pockets of society that need help, once big government gets in control of that, then they control you and they control them, I should say. So again, this comes down to systems that we've built up to have people rely on, and then now the system actually controls them. Otherwise, you know, they suffer, and usually they do, because now your friend will say, actually, I will probably lie that she did do her 15 hours, because otherwise she'll get in deep trouble.
This is exactly what happens.
And yeah. And so by lying that she did do her 15 hours, she will just get paid less every week. So in actual fact, it's a way of the government paying less to the people.
And pushing them into poverty.
And pushing them into poverty. People that really need it, that have children that depend on it. And this isn't luxury, you know, people buying luxury things for their kids. This is people buying ordinary stuff like food and uniforms and books, school uniforms and books for their kids.
We need to oppose this. We need to oppose this vigorously and vociferously.
Absolutely. So this is why we're asking people to stop being apathetic and find a cause that they are passionate about and follow it through. Extremely, extremely important. We find more and more cases of everybody being apathetic, especially the youth, being more apathetic. And I'm not an old man, but I'm definitely I'm in the middle, and I'm seeing that very youthful, you know, 19-year-olds are very apathetic, and the older generation are kind of apathetic because they've got food in the fridge and they're all good. They've got a nice nest egg, and everyone is just feathering their own nest. So,
except I'd like to say we had one 19-year-old at our 9/11 protest today who was far from apathetic.
Yeah.
And I had a discussion with him today, which has been videoed, and we talked a little bit about what it's like at uni. And he said that that they just don't know. And for some reason, their lack of knowledge keeps them in a state of apathy. But he reckons that by explaining this to some of his classmates at uni, that they could potentially be woken up. I mean,
well,
we may
I
have a
so.
Sleeping giant on our hands. You know, we may have in our own community a resource there. It's just that it hasn't been woken up, and I think we need to find ways to do that. And I do think young people need to actually be the spark here. Because you need that incredible youthful energy.
Well, what I'd love to ask our listeners is to, if they've got a great story of some young people, or if you're below 25, to write in about your lack of apathy, and that you've been cured of the of apathy, and that some of the actions that you've done, we would love to hear them and report on them. If you've got any other comments about the show, we'd love you to leave comments on our website, which is truthnews.com.au.
Please, we absolutely love comments and feedback.
Yeah, and if you just click on the podcast section of truthnews.com.au, you can leave comments on every show.
Straight to us.
And, if you want us to cover any topics next week, please... please leave a comment as well.
And keep your eye on 911oz.com for 911 Truth News.
Absolutely. I'm Joshua Jackson.
And I'm Harrowood Fenton.
And this is Good Night.
From Truth News Radio Australia.